Sana means a healthy mind in a healthy body and radiance. Sana Wellness, the podcast, explores the world of modern wellness through relatable conversations with experts and thought leaders to inspire and empower you on your wellness journey so you can shine your light brighter. I'm your host, Kylie Jane. We're so glad you're here, Sana Light. The menstrual cycle is a stunning barometer for what's going on inside our body. However, the wake-up calls can be relatively gentle or can scream loudly at you. In this episode, we're joined by Trista Chan, registered dietitian and women's health expert, to discuss what hormones are, their vital role in women's health, and a hormonal disorder common among women of reproductive age, and a condition that I myself have, polycystic ovarian syndrome, otherwise known as PCOS. Together with Trista, we'll explore some of the most common hormonal challenges, what might be occurring, and the importance of cultivating body and hormone intelligence to begin the journey of self-healing through nutrition and lifestyle choices. So welcome to Trista.
I'm Trista Chan. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist based in Toronto, Canada. So quite a ways away from you, Kylie, but love the power of the internet. Let's connect. And I am the owner of The Good Life Dietitian, where our mission is to empower women to develop healing and sustainable nutrition habits to ultimately live a good life. So I do specialize in hormonal health, particularly polycystic ovary syndrome. Super excited to dive deep into that today. And I do place a strong emphasis on developing healthy relationships with food as well, because I truly believe that's such a foundational piece in empowering people to take control of their health and also make changes that last, right? So thank you so much, Kylie, for having me here. Really excited to chat all things hormone health.
Yay. Yeah. And I think one other thing that's just so, so interesting about your story, and when we connected, we spoke about this, is your Chinese heritage. And I'm currently in China, but yeah, just also how, you know, the cultural aspect of food and the importance of food from that point of view, that, you know, food is emotional. Food does, it goes far beyond just what you're eating. It's, you know, a social thing, a cultural thing. I know that's also part of your philosophy, is also just taking that aspect and that part into account.
Oh, absolutely, right? Because the way I see it, it's you have to truly meet patients, right, where they're at and understand where they're coming from, understand their cultural upbringing and the food, which is a big part of our health beyond nutrients, right? It's that social well-being, connection, reducing stress. So I think it's definitely a long time coming in terms of diversifying nutrition, diversifying wellness, diversifying dietetics, because otherwise, right, we're not really truly supporting those who may fall to the wayside when it comes to a lot of Eurocentric kind of wellness approaches, right? So I think of it like, yes, there's that accessibility lens, right? But it's also just really providing like truly effective supports and services as well. So absolutely, you know, I grew up as a Chinese Canadian, kind of get a blend as a first generation immigrant of more Cantonese style Chinese food mixed with Western food. So it's definitely a little bit of my own lived experience, but also constant learning as well.
Right. And also, you know, just better understanding ourselves and coming from that approach of, you know, understanding our bodies, understanding that they're different, understanding that our food choices might be a little bit different too, and it might look different for everyone. And it's okay, you know, if you want to eat rice, for example, I know that was something that we had spoken about, because that's, you know, of course, very important, for example, in the Chinese culture and what people are used to eating in the East. So those, you know, nutrition and lifestyle choices will look different for everyone. I want to dive deeper into, you know, understanding hormones. We hear about hormonal health a lot. What are hormones? You know, what do they do? What does it mean in terms of women's health specifically, and why do they matter so much?
Yeah. So when we say hormones, I find, you know, the first thing most of us think of is mood, right? We think of moody teenagers coming of age. Oh, they're just hormonal, right? They're angsty. it's just the hormones, they're flaring up. And yes, that's definitely part of it. But hormones is so much more than just mood, and it affects pretty much every age and stage of life beyond growth and adolescence. So when we talk about hormones, we're referring to really the endocrine system. And this is a system in our body which circulates the hormones that help us perform many functions. So ranging from metabolism, right? It regulates our metabolism to, of course, our mood, emotions, but sleep as well. You know, our reproductive health, fertility, menstrual cycles, our sexual function, our stress management, our appetite hormones. So it really integrates or affects every single thing you can think of, pretty much, when it comes to health. So it's very important that we're paying attention to our hormonal health. I love that there's a strong emphasis and increased growth, right, in terms of awareness and education, because an imbalance can pretty much impact, because it's so connected, all areas of our health, especially for women. Hormones are, of course, important for all, like those with and without ovaries, but those do naturally experience some more imbalances throughout the life, right? Even throughout our months, as we're going through our menses or period, our estrogen progesterone fluctuates. Of course, there's the puberty, right? And then it's people so choose. Pregnancy, childbirth, breastfeeding impacts our hormones. And then, of course, there's the perimenopause, the menopause, the postmenopause. So it's constantly changing naturally throughout the natural seasons of life, I should say. And definitely very important as such to adjust our knowledge and our nutrition and lifestyle to support our well-being through these changing stages of life.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, for women, like you said, we have a lot more going on in terms of, you know, hormones or sex hormones. And of course, the interaction between, you know, for example, our sex hormones and stress hormones, and how that can affect the production of our sex hormones. Could you just explain to us a little bit about, so we hear a lot about estrogen and progesterone, right, which are the main sex hormones, for example, in the menstrual cycle. What are those two hormones do? What are they responsible for?
So estrogen and progesterone are two sex hormones that all males and females have, essentially in different levels. So when we're talking about those who are menstruating, it fluctuates depending on our phase of the cycle. So in the beginning of our cycle, which is our follicular phase, this is when the estrogen and the progesterone starts increasing. Right? Eventually, we're in the middle of the phase where we're ovulating. And this is very, this is when we're the most fertile stage, estrogen peaks. If we don't get pregnant, then estrogen and progesterone starts declining in our luteal phase. And that progesterone change particularly is what triggers a little bit of those PMS symptoms that we do feel. So the irritability, the fatigue, the sore breasts starts declining, and thus that triggers our uterine lining to shed, our period to come, and then that whole cycle begins again. So these are very natural fluctuations. depending on hormone imbalances that can be caused by environment, stress, lifestyle, genetics, they can get a little bit out of whack though, right? There's estrogen dominance, there's low estrogen, there's low progesterone that can be manifested or can be seen through really painful periods, PMS, missing periods, in the case of polycystic ovary syndrome, right? Maybe very, very long cycles. I've seen up to 150 days, 180 days.
Oh my gosh.
So it is important to pay attention to these hormones, understand how they play a role in our bodies as well.
Right. And I know you mentioned, you know, some of the signs or symptoms that hormones maybe are a little bit unbalanced. So what are those? So PMS would be one. How else would that manifest in the body?
Yeah, so there's tons of symptoms and also diagnoses that are associated with our endocrine system. So there's PCOS, or oftentimes people may be diagnosed increasing with endometriosis, for example, in which there's estrogen dominance and it's shown a lot of pain around our period, right? Severe, debilitating pain that's often just dismissed traditionally, unfortunately. There's, you know, PMDD, so it's clinical depression prior to our period. So it's, think of PMS on steroids, right? When every month there's a mental health debilitating challenge. But on a more, let's say, day-to-day, oftentimes some clients or patients will come to me and they're like, I haven't been diagnosed with anything, but I just like feel like something's wrong, right? Like there's gut dysfunction, right? And I'm a huge believer in, of course, evidence-based nutrition, but really trusting people's lived experiences, right? I'm a huge believer that we're all, you know, born with strong intuition. We need to work towards developing the mind-body connection. But if, let's say, someone comes to me and they're like, I haven't been diagnosed with anything, but I'm feeling chronic fatigue. I'm constantly on edge. It feels like my cortisol levels are through the roof, right? I'm really jumping. I can't sleep. I have insomnia. That could be a sign of elevated cortisol, inflammation, right? Maybe there's poor gut health, and our gut modulates a lot of our hormones as well. So maybe there's constipation, diarrhea, bloating. Maybe there's intensive primal cravings. Maybe we're feeling cold all the time. So oftentimes it is all connected and could be indicators that we can investigate a little bit into your hormones.
Right. And I love that too, is just that, you know, of course there's the evidence and there's nutrition and ways to look at these things, but people, we are, you know, innately, only we know what we're experiencing in our body, right? And we have that, if we just give ourselves the patience, or we operate from that place of curiosity and looking at something like, okay, I feel like something is off. What could it be? We do have that innate ability. And I think sometimes people get a little bit overwhelmed, or also, you know, maybe they do a little bit of research online and they become really just confused or scared or fearful, or why am I so hungry all the time? I shouldn't be. So there's a lot of, you know, should and shouldn't, and kind of, I guess, like body shame or being very frustrated with our bodies, but just a reminder or remembering that our bodies are there to protect us, and they're, you know, they're, whatever they're showing us or whatever's manifesting is really just a sign. And it's about giving yourself that patience and that opportunity to explore it, you know, whether it's with a dietitian or your doctor, explore it a little bit further to get to the root and the why.
Oh, absolutely. And I 100% agree. I think you hit the nail right there when you said it's shame, right? It's ultimately shame when it comes to talking about hormones, periods, menstrual cycle, fertility, oftentimes, right? And shame when it comes to, you know, speaking outwardly about these symptoms, because it's been underserved for so long. And I see time and time again what that manifests into is a lot of restriction, mindset, right? Thinking we're not feeling good. Maybe there's intense craving. I should fight it more. I should eat less, right? maybe my doctor or you know, this blog told me to stop eating white rice and white noodles, but that's all I know, right? So there's a lot of shame inherent in maybe our cultural foods as well. So absolutely, I 100% agree. It's time to remove some of that shame, right? We're naming the elephant in the room and knowing that ultimately when it comes to tuning into our body, when it comes to making positive nutrition and sustainable changes that incorporate your cultural foods, right, that isn't just weight-centric and weight-focused, that it's out of a place of self-love and out of a place of self-acceptance. And that can manifest in a lot of restriction and a lot of self-defeat. And we're kind of stuck in this toxic cycle where we don't think we're doing anything right, where we think we have to just focus on weight loss, where we're depriving ourselves, we're abandoning our cultural foods, when really creating sustainable changes and balancing our hormones and feeling good and supporting our overall well-being is most effective when it comes from a place of self-acceptance and self-compassion.
No, I love that. What is PCOS? I see it more and more among, you know, women that I speak to, friends being diagnosed with it. So do we know the main causes of it? And what is it, you know, what are the symptoms?
Yeah, for sure. So PCOS is the most common endocrine, so hormone disorder, of premenopausal people with ovaries. So it's estimated that it affects 6 to 10% of the population, which is quite significant, characterized by excessive androgen hormones. So this is an excess in male sex hormones like testosterone, for example. It's characterized by ovulatory dysfunction, right? So that PMS or missed or delayed periods, those long cycles, right? Maybe delayed fertility and or excess follicles on the ovaries, which you can find through ultrasound.
Right.
So for adults, if you're going to a doctor, a diagnosis requires about 2 out of 3 of these characteristics. Living with PCOS, it comes with a lot of challenges, as you or many of the listeners who may be living with it right now know. So in addition to the risk development, so higher risk for type 2 diabetes, heart disease, mood disorders, there are a ton of day-to-day challenges that most people or most healthcare, right, because it's so new, don't really acknowledge or validate. So because of the excess testosterone, like hirsutism, so hair growth on our face, right, mixed with male pattern balding, maybe there's acne, inflammation, right, cystic acne, intense primal cravings. I've had even clients tell me that, you know, they've woken up in the middle of the night craving sweets, mood swings, you know, chronic fatigue. So I am, on one hand, very glad that finally, right, long time coming, there's a lot more awareness and education. But part of me is like, darn, like, of course, you know, because it impacts women, right? It's been so long overdue.
Not always fun.
Not at all. So nowadays, though, there is more of a push and research and advocacy for nutrition and lifestyle interventions to help those with PCOS manage their symptoms, improve their quality of life, take their control back in life every day, and in the long term, reduce the risk for those other chronic diseases.
Right, which is amazing. But, you know, sometimes I know when I was diagnosed there, it was just like, well, you've got PCOS, keep exercising and eat well. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
and this is right. But, and I'm someone who, you know, I know a lot about nutrition, right? And I was just thinking about, you know, all the women that don't have a nutrition background or don't understand a little bit about, you know, what should I be focusing on, right? So in terms of the food, and I know you mentioned one of the risk factors is, you know, type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance. So then, of course, focusing on our carbohydrate intake, but also pairing it with fats and protein. What mm-hmm. are some of the dietary or nutrition related choices that we can be making to better support our bodies through PCOS?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it is so much more, right, than just eat better or lose weight. And that's right. Really, you know, before you get that advice. So absolutely, that's the core of it. But beyond that, mm-hmm. taking into account the insulin resistance that's so present, the inflammation. When I'm working with patients, the first piece I always address before even the what is the when. So that meal timing. Because every time we eat carbohydrates, and we do need, it breaks down into glucose, the sugar, which we do need for energy, right? Our brain only runs off of glucose. But that causes our body, our pancreas, to release insulin in response to that. And what we're aiming for is a low and slow rise in blood sugar and insulin, rather than a roller coaster effect that can worsen that insulin resistance and cause the flare up of those symptoms. Now, typically with most people's PCOS, I'm noticing a trend in a lot of patients in that they're receiving, you know, maybe not the best nutrition advice. It's very much lose weight, eat better. So they end up eating less or they're skipping meals during the day, trying to quote unquote 5 p.m. hits, blood sugar is a little low, right? Our body's on overdrive, we're high stress. And then that really urgent, intense craving, potentially binge eating begins, and it's usually on high carb foods because their body's so deprived of energy. We want the quickest digesting carbohydrates possible. Well, my first piece of advice is when, right? So we're eating breakfast. Research suggests that eating breakfast within 2 hours lowers our cortisol levels, right? Cortisol leads to inflammation, another common characteristic of PCOS. So eating during the day and then every 3 to 4 hours afterwards, ideally, of course, it's, you know, finding what works best for you, your health. But that's the general guideline because that's going to give our bodies a low and slow, stable sugar, glucose, and insulin release. Now, in terms of what that is, totally exactly like you said, we're pairing carbs. We're choosing high fiber carbs when we can, more often, with protein and fats. And that's because we digest these a lot slower. So we're getting a much slower and lower, very relaxed increase in our blood sugars. And thus the insulin's going to respond like that as well. So instead of that roller coaster ride where it grows up, we get that quick energy hit and then we drop, we're exhausted, we're hungry again, right? We're moody, we're shaky. Then we're getting a little bit more of a chill energy that's more satiating. It's a little longer lasting. Yeah. So let's say we're using rice as an example, right? Because I have so many Chinese clients who come to me and they just think they can't ever eat this food again. It almost instills a sense of food insecurity in them, like, right? Even if they have that access to it. Well, I know. I don't know what else to cook, right? I can't eat. So
that's it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking, you know, let's think abundance, right? Always abundance. What can I add rather than what can I take away? What if I take those carbs, what can I add to them? Can I steam some fish? So a really delicious dish is ginger, scallion, you know, steamed fish, that protein to go with that rice. Can I add some, you know, bok choy or tau miu or a lot of delicious non-starchy vegetables on the side, right? That's going to help give me all these insulin-sensitizing minerals like magnesium, but also help with fiber. That's going to help that gut health, and that's going to keep me full and satiated for longer. So every time we're eating something, we're thinking abundance. What can I add? What's some protein? What's some fats? What's some fiber I can add in here? That's going to help stabilize the insulin, give me enough nutrients to fight that inflammation. And can I do that again in 3 to 4 hours when I'm comfortably hungry again, right? Am I eating on a consistent pattern? Our bodies are creatures of habit. It loves routine.
Amazing. Yeah, and I love that operating from that state or that place of abundance, right? Because then there are so many more options available to you versus, like we were saying before, the very restrictive mindset. And, you know, as human beings, when we feel restricted or we feel like something is, you know, we're insecure in, well, I can't have that and I'm not allowed to eat that and all this very negative, restrictive language, it just makes us stressed, right? It adds to that stress. And then that's kind of all we're thinking about. It's just, well, I can't have sugar. I can't do that. So what are you thinking about? You're thinking about, you know, you're focusing on the can't as opposed to, well, what is available to me? And, or how do I dress it up, right? How do I take the carb that I love so much that isn't bad for us and that our body does need and our brain needs? How do I take that and, you know, add some protein or add some veggies to it? And support our bodies that way.
Absolutely. And I find there's so much power in permission when it comes to all food, right? Especially when we know that we're coming from a place of abundance, right? That it can actually help to make a little bit of peace with food. Maybe that cookie, maybe that cake, maybe that ice cream isn't quite your enemy, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe it's allowed. Maybe it's going to, yes, spike up the insulin, but perhaps by giving ourselves permission, we're eating enough during the day, we're stimulating our insulin, that can help reduce the cravings. But also maybe we're taking away some of those can't have, you know, labels that food is a reward, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of power in permission, in making peace with food, and knowing that it actually is okay to eat all foods. It's just how we're doing the meal timing, how we're pairing them. Are we honoring our fullness cues, listening to our body, and are we thinking of nourishment from a place of self-compassion?
And it is. It's a, you know, the way we eat is really the most basic way that we can demonstrate self-care to ourselves, right? We are nourishing ourselves and supporting our bodies in that way so that we can face the stresses of the day, right? Because if you're not nourishing yourself, if you don't have that energy, right, that fuel, and you don't have those nutrients powering all the amazing processes going on in your body, then you can't really give the best of yourself. So reframing that food and as a nourishing form of self-care.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. Food is self-care, not self-control. But I got me.
Right. Yeah, completely. And I want to ask you, Trista, from if someone is listening to this and they think, you know, I want to be like that. I want to be operating from a place of abundance. I want to be, you know, planning my meals, eating a bit more consistently. I don't want to feel tired at the end of the day or hit that 3 p.m. crash or live off coffee. How do we, you know, what are some basic ways that we can set some, you know, sustainable, nourishing goals for ourselves to support our hormones and just for our optimal health?
Yeah, so absolutely it can seem like a lot, right? So I know, you know, we talked about simplifying, right? Listen to our body, but I can still feel like a lot to be like, what? I have to eat 3 meals a day. I have to prep. I have to grocery shop. I have to walk. I have to meditate, do deep breathing, right? And that can be that can be a little debilitating in itself. So my first tip is to choose one thing that you want to get started on today. And start slow and trust that consistency compounds. So rather than doing a complete overhaul, right, we're thinking, what can I do meal by meal? Let's say we're starting with tonight. If you're listening at night, right, not even breakfast tomorrow. If you're living at breakfast and we're not waiting till the evening, the next hour, next 2 hours, what is one small thing I can do for myself? Is that packing breakfast for the next day? Is that bringing, you know, canned tuna and crackers or dried wasabi peas with me as I'm going out on my day, right? So I'm not getting over hungry. Is that getting up, going for a stretch, a quick walk in between meetings? So instead of thinking of it as one huge lifestyle transformation, we're breaking it down into very, very small, manageable day-by-day steps. And I know that's not exciting, and I know that doesn't sound transformational. It's not super sexy.
But come on, we're just looking for a quick fix.
Right. I want to see everything tomorrow. So it's about trusting the process, trusting the consistency compound. So start with one thing, drinking more water, packing a snack, going for a stretch. Make that maybe, if nothing else, if that's all you change this week, great. Because that's lifelong, right? That you're going to be holding on to that habit. And then we add from there. And one day you may look back without even realizing and see how far you've come. I use the same analogy as building a career, right? We don't build a career or a business overnight. It's the small things we add to it daily. Not every day is exciting when we go out and go to work. But you may look back on one day and think, wow, my resume is stacked. I've developed all these skills, this knowledge, this great network, without even realizing the day-to-day work that I've put in that's moved the needle forward.
Yeah, and often, you know, if we just tune in with ourselves and slow down. So once we're, you know, equipped and we have the knowledge and the education, then we're able to just empower ourselves and say, okay, out of all of this information from just this podcast, for example, what do I need the most, right? Is it as simple as switching from my morning coffee to a green tea, or like you said, just adding a little bit of fish or veggies to your lunchtime rice? So it is these kind of small, achievable things that you need to decide for yourself. What do you think is going to be the most beneficial, and start from there, taking your lifestyle into account, because of course everyone's different, everyone has different schedules. So that's going to be the most sustainable. It's really just saying, okay, what is that one thing that you can do? Maybe it is just drinking the 2 liters of water and helping your liver detoxify, right? And get, you know, processed things, or adding a little bit of fermented food into your lunch for that gut health. So often we know the answers ourselves and what we need to do, but it's just, it's the getting started, right? The how. And that's why I love your approach of just, what is one thing I can do for myself starting today? Doesn't have to be this huge, big overhaul overnight, or, you know, I need to spend every single Sunday meal prepping for 5 hours, which is definitely not exciting to me. I know some people love it, but, you know, it is just a very, that low and slow, starting low and slow and building from there.
Exactly. It's the long game, right? It's a lifestyle change, right? So I'm always saying, if you can't do something for 5 years, why do it for 5 minutes? So we're starting slow and meeting ourselves where we're at.
Right. Yeah, completely. Oh, well, Trista, I want to thank you so, so much. I have one more question for you, and then I'll let you go. I want to ask, what are you sipping on these days? What can we find in your cup, your sip of choice?
So recently I actually have challenged myself to switch to decaf coffee, but I love the comfort. So I still start my day with a decaf coffee, and I've discovered that I love the taste of adding 2 scoops of collagen powder to it. It gives it a nice creaminess, gives me a little bit of a protein boost, a little bit of research suggesting it may help with gut health, skin health, hair, nails. And I put a little bit of hazelnut creamer in there as well. And it is just the perfect.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes. And how about you?
Super, yeah. Actually, I'm still on the coffee train, but I do love my matcha in the afternoon. So I'll do coffee in the morning and matcha in the afternoon. But I've also recently been adding the collagen, and I was just super curious about it and reading so much about it. And I must say, I don't know, maybe it's just a placebo effect, but I can see or feel some change in my skin after 2 months. So I'm gonna stick to that that collagen too. But your hazelnut creamer sounds like a great addition. I should try that. But I just want to say thank you so much, Trista. Thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing your incredible knowledge and your very compassionate and inclusive approach to hormonal health and women's health in general. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to chat more with you and your community, right? It's a long time coming, all the resources around hormonal health.
So where can we find you? And I know you've also got some incredible online programs that you're running.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me through Instagram at thegoodlifedietitian. Or on my website, www.thegoodlifedietitian.com. I do offer a full-service course, The Complete Guide to PCOS Management, and it's a 5-week course providing students everything they need to know to manage PCOS with diet and lifestyle. And, of course, I also provide one-on-one nutrition counseling services. But definitely shoot me a message on Instagram if you have any questions. I'm always posting great content, recipes, and tips from there.
Amazing. Yeah, that's how I found you. So love your Instagram. I just want to say thank you so much again for joining us. And I'm sure those listening learned tons from you. And I hope that they can continue to learn more from you through your online channels.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Kylie, for having me.